This is the Coaches Rising podcast, and today this is a special edition because this is a recording of our first ever live podcast that we held recently. It was such a joy for me to come together in community to explore the topics we'll explore today with Bob Anderson. So the format's a little different. You're going to hear me interview Bob for a short while, 45 minutes or so, and then we'll take some questions from people who were present. We're going to be exploring today higher purpose, intuition, and unitive leadership, and why these topics are relevant for our times and relevance for coaches. It's a really rich discussion. And as I said, Bob Anderson is joining us. If you haven't heard Bob on the podcast before, he is the creator and author of the Leadership Circle Profile. Also, he's co-authored two fantastic books, Mastering Leadership and Scaling Leadership. And he's now leading the Unity Academy. So we are in good hands. And let's dive right in. So here's the live podcast with myself, Bob Anderson, and the Coaches Rising community. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Well, 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 here we are. Welcome, everybody. And I'm thrilled. I was just sharing with Bob and Noor. I'm totally thrilled to be with you all today. And this is the first ever Coaches Rising live podcast. I'm not one to move quickly on things. I've had this idea for about 2 years. And finally, we're here. So it just feels really, really precious to me to be able to spend this next 90 minutes together in community and talking about the topics we'll talk about today. We're going to be talking about conscious leadership, higher purpose, intuition, transmission, leadership itself. How do we coach from these places? We're going to share personal stories.
and we speak from what moves us most deeply. So I'll say a few more things, and then Bob and I are going to start to have a conversation. If you don't know Coaches Rising yet, then we care deeply about coaches and transformational practitioners. So we create trainings, learning experiences for transformational coaches to deepen in their work. I feel it's a vocation. It's a lifelong vocation. I think we're going to talk about this today. And so that's what we do. And we, you know, I feel more than ever in our times, the need for coaches and the need for people to support the proliferation of embodied conscious leadership in the world. And I looked back at the manifesto that we wrote, and I want to talk about this more today, because this manifesto, I mean, I call it a manifesto. It's a little bit, it's a little bit much to call it that, when we founded Coaches Rising, one day, you know, we'd spent a lot of time feeling into what is this thing. And then I wrote down, and I just wrote that Coaches Rising is dedicated to empowering the world's coaches so they can act as a vehicle that brings about the positive change the world needs and transform the lives and communities they touch. And we feel that coaching as a transmission, as a way of being, holds many keys to unlocking the huge potential of human beings. And what's remarkable to me is, I might word it slightly differently today, but really the essence is just the same thing. And that just came through me. I did not think about that. I just sat down and the words flowed through me onto the keyboard. And it was like, this is it. Say yes to this. I'm actually stealing Bob's invitation there. So we care about coaches, and, you know, wow, these are remarkable times. I mean, that is just an understatement. These are incredibly challenging times in many ways. And at the same time, for me, if we look at the systems around us, it's very obvious right now they're perturbed. And that can create this sense of uncertainty and discomfort. But it's when systems are perturbed that the potential for transformation is greatest. And I think that's important to remember. Of course, that's true individually, but it's true collectively. So having said that, our intention at Coaches Rising is to keep serving in these times. I don't know how things are going to play out. I feel unreasonably inspired in these times. Something just got a hold of me, and I feel more and more inspired. And we have a commitment to walk with you, the coaching community, in service of your work. And our intention is to bring us together more and more in community like this, because I think there's something very powerful and palpable in community. So let's just take a moment. I'm going to bring Bob in a second, but let's just take a moment. If you want, you can close your eyes. If you don't want to, that's fine. But just, if it's not already, just allow your attention to drop down into your body. This incredible body that we are. Just sensing the feeling of being alive. You may notice discomfort or tension, or you may notice joy, expression, whatever's here right now. We're just, the invitation is just to, if possible, gently embrace what's here. Noticing sensations, emotion. And just however this works for you, this invitation, it doesn't even matter if it doesn't. What's the highest intention for you being on this call? today. See if you can just feel that, tune to that. In particular, just attuning to the frequency of that highest calling or intention. My belief is that the future of coaching is vibration. That's not something I would have said 2 or 3 years ago. Okay, so thank you. I'm going to invite you to open your eyes. And just before I see there's a lot of videos off. If you feel called to, I would appreciate this just to see more of you on video. I'm just looking through gallery. I'm seeing Deb and Holly and Graham, Maria, Nancy, Hendrika. So if you can, I'd love to see you on video. And we can just tune into that we are a field calling in from all around the world. Bob, dear brother Bob, how are you today?
Wonderful. Absolutely can't wait to see what unfolds in this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
How do we want to be used in this conversation?
That's a great question. Actually, I wanted to bring in something that I saw written on one of the videos you've created as a starting point. We're going to touch into, I think, many different topics today: intuition, higher purpose, conscious leadership. But something you wrote was, what if the most important work of your life doesn't begin with effort, but with listening? And I wondered if you could say why you wrote that on the video. What is the importance of that statement for you?
I wrote that. it sounds like me. I'm realizing more and more that my life has been authored by my listening. Of course, you know, I've come through the stages of development like everybody else. So I was authored by voices I wasn't aware of. I was authored, self-authoring. I'm the one creating this future reality. I saw myself as stalking my longing, like a hunter tracks in the woods. And then it became obvious that it's been stalking me the whole time, and that you said it best, Joel, when the words flowed through, that moment of intuition where it just poured out on the page and your whole body said yes. It's like, oh, say yes to this. And so my life has been a series of yeses, authored by listening, authored by that a deep inner current that I've somehow learned to track, and that's insistent that doesn't invest in a compromise. And once I see it or hear it, or like you had that experience, there's a whole inner yes, like, ah, even though it scares the crap out of me, even though I don't know how, even though it's like, what? Who, me? All of that is also wrapped up in it. And so, the deeper layers of our being know why we're here and what we're up to at this juncture in human history. And our job is simply to listen and learn to listen more deeply and say yes, come what may. And God, it's led me into an incredible life. And I've learned to have faith in now, where it used to terrify me. It's more like, well, it's never let me down before. It's never led me off a cliff. So here goes. And yeah, synchronicities abound. It's just been an extraordinary life. And I'm coming more and more to the posture of a kind of thy will be done. Like, I don't know what's in store. Use me in the time this body has left. Use me. I'm here, ready. And I it's been the primary theme of my life. Like, if I were to write a book on, like, the top 10 themes, that would be number one. This listening to a deeper purpose that wants to have its way in my life. And after, like you said, 2 years of, like, cautionary deliberation, I finally say yes. Sometimes more quickly than others, but sometimes it's been a long wait. But if I've done anything well, it's simply listen and say yes.
What's that process like? Because I think a lot of people listening may relate to how what you're sharing, that sometimes maybe we hear a voice and then we resist, or maybe we don't fully trust. Is this actually something? Is this life calling me into something? Is this just me? And I wondered if you could share a little bit of your journey with, the learning to trust that story and how you know it's true for you and what's made it more possible to trust it and access it.
Well, that's a long story. I don't want to take up all our time. I grew up in a Catholic tradition, and my uncle was a very famous Jesuit, moral theologian. I have quite a heritage in terms of the family lineage I was born into. And that tradition taught me from a very early age, what are you called to be? What are you called to do? Be, come, give, contribute, serve. Was a central question. And of course, in the traditional sense, it's like, are you supposed to be a priest? Are you supposed to get married? That kind of, like, what are you called to? But in a deeper way, it's a discernment process of what's beckoning me forward, what's calling me, who am I really, what am I here for? And so I got onto it as a question early. It didn't have answers, and I found myself gravitating, even though I was in business school and studying economics and statistics and all that stuff, gravitating toward opportunities to be involved in human growth and development, and loved it. And that tension came to a head when I was working in the family business in a feed manufacturing plant. In the middle of the night, inside a railroad car, a voice spoke out loud. Unreflected, I was exhausted, and a voice came through out loud. I'm not becoming who I am. That's pretty declarative and hard. It's not a silent voice in my head. And I took it seriously, and I started with a question. I won't get into the whole story, but the question that emerged from Rilke's, what must I write? As a poet, must I write, was his question. What must I be about in this life, to live the life I came here to live and not someone else's life? And that was a question I lived with for a while as I worked in the feed plant. And I started a journal and I listed out things that had mattered to me that when I was around them, I came alive. This is what lit me up. And this is, other times when I was most bored or distracted or agitated, what was going on in these lives? How was life speaking to me? And the pattern emerged. It just became very clear, even though it was like, really? I'll bet the farm on that? Leave the family business for that? It seems so. How do I build a life on? I want to help people grow and develop psychologically, professionally, spiritually. How do I? I'm making dog food, but I said yes. And after quite a bit of hesitation, and then the synchronicities arose. Literally, the first day I took it seriously, I went to the training department in the company. I didn't even know we had one. I heard about it. I went, what do you guys do? Oh, by the way, there's a guy who just graduated from a master's in organization. He just joined the team. He's right in the office next door. You might want to talk to him. I go into his office. Yeah, sure. Oh, by the way, the program starts next week. And I call the head of the department. He says, yeah, don't even enroll. Just come. Just join. If you don't like it, no problem. If you like it, we'll get you enrolled. I mean, this was like, so a week later, I'm in a master's program. And my life has had that kind of synchronistic magic ever since. And so I've learned to trust it. And I've actually cultivated it with learning practices of intuition, which my rational mind dismissed completely. And so I did when my wife and I traveled around the world before we had kids, I made an experiment. I'm going to do an intuitive exercise exploration every day, write down everything I get, and then I won't evaluate it till I get home. And it could be a bunch of garbage or it could be more interesting than that. I didn't know. Well, blew me out. Halfway through, more less than halfway through, I was just stunned by what I was learning. I was writing things down I didn't understand, and then people would give me a book along the way, and I'd read this book, and I'd say, that's what I just wrote down, and I didn't understand it. And it was in that trip that I decided to start my own business quite unexpectedly. Well, it wasn't a shred of an idea when I left. And I wrote down what was going to unfold. And Kim, my wife, reminds me, on a regular basis. Oh, you remember when you wrote that down? Well, here it is. Just happened. So, experience like that has taught my really strong inner critic and left brain bullshit detector. It's like to kind of let go and trust this. And I'm in it again. I'm in it now. Few years ago, I went on a speaking tour in Africa, and I decided I was 65, and I just finished a round of writing a couple books, and it's like, what's next? And I decided to use a thought experiment. Assume I only have 5 good years to live. Let's assume that. What wants to come through me in 5 years? Now, as a business person, entrepreneur, creating a business, I know it takes a long time to pull something through. So I didn't give myself a year to live. You pack up your belongings and say your goodbyes. I didn't give myself 10 years because I'm 65 and that would put me at 75 and there's no guarantees. So 5 years was like, I think I could pull something meaningful through in 5 years. So what wants to come through and who do I want to become in order in service of that over those 5 years? That was the question. And I found another must that came through with that feeling of yes. I look back, the times I was most alive was in communities of transformation. And so I must convene and lead communities of transformation. 5 years later, we launched the Unity Academy, which I didn't even have as an idea that time. Listen and follow.
I've got a few questions that bubble up. I want to share a story that so I'm hearing that there's over time you've learned to trust this voice, and I recognize that too in my own life. Some of these stories are quite funny. I remember when I was in my early 20s and I'd just come back from India and I just didn't know what to do, so I just got this job like training to work in a credit card call center department. So I did like 2 weeks of training, and then it was the last day. And then th this same thing happened. This voice just said, "This is not it. You have to go." So I just stood up in the training room and I said, I have to go. I'm not meant to be here."
Wow.
And I thought that the lady who trained us, I thought she was going to say, "You wasted our time. We're 2 weeks in and now you tell us you don't want to do this." But on the way out, she said, "Good for you." She was like, "Good for you. Get out. Go for it." So, but then what blew my mind was I literally got down through the elevator, walked out of the building, and I got a phone call from this lady I knew. And she, at the time, I was working also as an artist. I trained as an artist. And she said, "I've got this project for you. It's a community art project. Do you want to come in and be part of it?" And I was stunned. I was like, so this, it seems like there's something about you have to step off a cliff a little bit, And I say that with humility because I also resist this. And sometimes I really want to know things are going to work out before I say yes to it, So that's a story I wanted to share. And I wondered if you could, you said, some things I think were important, like instead of what do I want to create, I'm hearing you say, what does life want to create through me? And I found that a very powerful question, like a meditative kind of koan that can prime one to receive, this information, and that inspiration is a key part of it. Could you say more about what practice or practices have you used to, to access this sense of higher purpose and intuition?
Well, that's a many. I mentioned the practices that I learned from. I actually learned from Innovation Associates, which was Peter Senge's organization, and led the field in leadership in terms of thought leadership in the 80s. And they had a practice called balancing intuition and reason, and they taught intuition techniques. And that's when those were the experiments I was running. But then I found myself intuitively guided, which is another long but amazing story. I ended up in the Barbara Brennan School of Healing for 4 years, which is all about opening up higher sense perception and being able to work very, very specifically and within the human energy field with real precision. Different layers and levels of the field, and it was astonishing. My mind was blown every day I was there, over 4 years, and that opened up more pathways. And some of the energetic practices I learned there open up much more current can flow through the field. And you learn to conduct more and more energy, which is information, which is the field is an informational vibratory field. And so, how do we access higher dimensions of that field, and allow kind of as our frequency matches that frequency, information can exchange? And then you get insight. And so, that's been a practice. And then I came back at the end of that school. I started to incorporate those practices into my meditation practices. So it became a kind of meditation and energetic practice, which I now understand is deep in the ancient traditions. I didn't know that then. Wisdom traditions and some of the traditions, tantric traditions, Kashmir Shaivism, for example, Taoism, energy circulation as a gateway to higher perception and to higher awareness. And so that became a practice, and things really opened up. So there are practices that are not hard to learn, actually. They're very accessible, that if you do them, you learn to conduct more and more energy or light or information, same, through the field of your body. And then insights just ride in. Einstein described it just that way. That his he said the intellect has little to do on the road to discovery. I 99 times I think, I get nothing. I sit in silence and ideas, I swim in silence and ideas come to me. So this hard work of trying to figure things out, and then a capacity to sit in stillness and silence and allow the energy to flow and ideas right in. It's magic, and it comes directly in response to what I'm either wrestling with or what's wanted of me. Some of it by surprise. Go ahead.
So anything you want to, I want to come back to the practices a little bit later, because I think there's a lot to say about that. I would like to connect what you're sharing now to leadership and itself, and the world we find ourselves in right now. Could you say something about the need or the relevancy for leaders to begin to, to open to this sense of purpose and intuition and be guided by it? And, when I look out into the world right now, I feel there's this kind of duality. On the one hand, if I look at the mainstream media, some of this is really true, like there's a lot of devastating things unfolding. There's also, the media tends to portray things in a certain light, but there's a lot of devastating things happening. There seems to be a lot of also leaders who are reacting in the world as well. And so that's one thing. But on the other hand, I see a massive movement of people who are doing deeper spiritual work, trauma healing, movement, embodied practice. If I look around my friends, I see a lot of us talking about feeling a sense, a deep sense of inspiration, which doesn't make sense, if I look at the news. And I'm just sharing that as a little bit of context for this question again about how what's going on in the world right now and the relevancy for us to begin to access. And I imagine indeed, there's many cultures where I don't want to say like we're just discovering some of this, many ancient cultures, indigenous cultures. I want to honor them. They have already privileged these things we're talking about. So what's the relevancy for leadership?
Oh, wow. Beautiful, huge question. I actually found myself observing that in meditation this morning. I get science feeds on Facebook and other things because I'm really interested in physics and science, and then, it just keeps feeding you stuff. What's emerging is remarkable. I mean, just remarkable the potentiality that we are developing. A potential for a cancer vaccine, a potential for virtually free energy, breakthroughs in nuclear fusion, and even free energy extracted directly from the field. Making matter from the field, literally just with light, making matter. Or quantum computing, where I just saw a thing where they've using, I think, was it photons or qubits or maybe electrons as the quantum unit, they're able to do a calculation that would take, in 4 hours, they did a calculation that would take a supercomputer for like 4 billion years. Artificial intelligence, with all of its risks, but all of its capabilities, we are developing unprecedented capability. And so the possibility of a world that works for everyone, for all life, is there for the taking. We're coming into tremendous capacity. And our moral and ethical and level of awareness development, which is what we're all about, is way behind the curve. And so it could equally be a period of tremendous destruction. And we're the generation that's going to decide it. I mean, I might not be around for how things play out over the next 25 to 30 years, but this is the time. And we are challenged to literally rewrite our relationship with this planet, with each other, with governance, with energy, with sustainability. All of this has to be rewritten. And so not only is it a VUCA or Bani type crazy complex time, but we're in a time where the order we've lived in is imploding. It's coming apart at the seams. And we can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And back to normal is a death sentence, really. So we have to reinvent society altogether. That's the challenge. And it goes way beyond VUCA and Bani for leaders. And that's so we're challenged with how do I lead and help my organization thrive, because that's our job together, but also do that in a way that leaves in the wake of our activity a world that works. How are we part of this emergent solution? And nobody knows how. So you've got a company like Syngenta that we work with that has traditionally put chemicals on the earth that are toxic, and they're trying to create reinvent their business in a way that actually renews the planet. They're working with climate scientists, they're working with Nature Conservancy. They're serious about we can do agriculture in a way that restores the earth. That's a leadership that's taking the current challenge seriously and saying, how are we as an organization trying to be used by this emerging future? And so there are hopeful signs there, and the key is nobody knows how. No one knows that. Collectively, we might have enough collective intelligence to move the needle, but largely what we're learning as leaders are learning that what we talked about back in the 80s, dialogue, with David Bohm and Isaac's work on dialogue, influenced by Krishnamurti, how to sit and listen to the field of intelligence, how to be informed by it, precisely where we're stuck, where we need to break through. And this sounds like woo-woo practice, but if you understand the physics of the field, it's not. It's how the field works. And we've grown up in a paradigm, as you mentioned, we've destroyed our indigenous traditions. We have completely reduced to mythology our wisdom traditions. And what stands at the forefront, at the center of our current paradigm, is a scientific materialist view of reality, which is dead, lifeless, random, disconnected, empty space is empty, there's no connection. And it's fundamentally off. It's not reality. And so the findings of quantum physics haven't made the mainstream yet. And when they do, we can bring back in all these traditions that we've said is worthless. So we're literally at a time right now where we're reconstructing our paradigm around the principle of our inherent unity and oneness and wholeness. And that must become the guiding principle in the emergent future. So how do we update our paradigm, sit in the kind of pregnant unknown, and listen to be informed by what wants to emerge in a way that serves the welfare not only of our organization and the ecosystem of our organization, but the whole planet? That's the challenge. And frankly, we don't have any choice about it. And it's not going to happen through governments kind of all of a sudden saying, you know what, we got to change the game. It's going to happen when enough morally enlightened leadership says, we're going to change the way things operate here and cooperate together to create a new order in the midst of the implosion of the old.
Later we'll talk about shadow, because I feel like it's a breakthrough. I already knew this, but something that dropped for me even recently was, and it's easy for me to say this because I'm privileged as well, so I want to, but I was struggling with what was happening in the world, but I dropped into a sense of the gift of the invitation into my own inner life and, you know, what wasn't resolved inside of me. So in a sense, like the intensity of what's unfolding in the world is actually increasing the efficacy and the need to kind of to feel what needs to be felt inside of me, to metabolize what wants to be metabolized. And so I felt that, and it there was a great sense of fear, but as I felt it, there was a sense of inspiration and love that was liberated inside of that. And so I want to ask, I mean, I've kind of teed up shadow now, but we're going to go into it, but and then I'm going to bring someone live in a moment. So if you've got a question, I just want to see if you're ready to bring that live. But whilst people are raising their hands, you know, if there's anything you want to share, bring in, anything that touches your question, you can just raise your hand and we'll come to you. Do you find, Bob, that there are people, there are leaders out there who are, they're open to this, you know, they're ready for it. They recognize the need, the necessity to, you know, to listen in a different way, to work collectively, to find new solutions?
I do. And we're finding them in our work in organizations. And we, in the Unity Academy, we have coaches that are drawn to this journey, and they're in contact with leaders who are also drawn to this journey. So part of what's unfolding now for us, and it's kind of the next stage, is how do we find those leaders and bring them together? So yes, I was on a call yesterday with a colleague of mine. He's going to be hosting a global conference of morally enlightened leaders around the crisis we're in, and it's sponsored by the Vatican. So it'll be held in Rome. And he was asking me, who do you know, at very high levels of efficacy in the world and impact in the world that could come to a conference like this. And so, Jude Kervan, who is working with a whole group of leaders and practitioners where this is the question: how do we change the world? How do we create regenerative economics? How do we create a world based on the principle of unity? And so it's emerging now, and our role as coaches plays a vital part. I see hands going up. I wanted to say something about shadow because we've mentioned it. I've talked about accessing this field and opening to larger or higher frequencies, which are deeper. Higher is deeper, more subtle. Subtle is more powerful, actually. And so as we open to those currents, our experience in working with people is even simple energetic practices, and people hit shadows. They get nauseous, they go out of the room, they get scared, it just emerges. As soon as you open to more light, more shadow emerges. And you hit, as it comes through the body, it hits the blocks and they start to reverberate. And so you can't fully open to everything we've been talking about without unwinding that constriction, those contracted parts of ourselves. And what I've learned about that is that it's not darkness. It's actually contracted essence, contracted light, my essence that I've taken offline at some point, intergenerationally or in my life, however that works. This is not okay. This part of you is not okay. And it's wrapped in shame, it's wrapped in terror, it's wrapped in self-loathing, it's wrapped in a lot of intense emotion, but inside it is essence waiting to be unwounded, unwound, unwound, same word. And so as we take on more light, there's more of a loving, wholehearted presence that can meet these dispossessed parts of ourselves and welcome them back into the unity of things. And that's shadow work. And it's essential because otherwise we restrict the flow, and the full creativity that wants to come through can't. But also we don't embed them in the new systems. If we're full of shadows and distortions, well, we're going to recreate that into the new systems as we architect them. So it's essential that we do this work and be clear vessels for the future that needs to emerge now. So as coaches, it's also imperative in lots of ways because if we haven't met these parts in ourselves and aren't able to hold them in reverence and love and curiosity and welcome, then when the client brings it to us, we can't meet them that way. We go into our own reaction, our own contraction. And that isn't to say we can't be helpful, but we can't, we aren't, we lose that resonance you talk about. We contract that resonance, which is the transformative elixir and alchemical agent of transformation. So it's imperative as coaches that we do that. And it's imperative to the creative process because the full flow of energy through the whole body, head, heart, and pelvis, head, heart, body, all those centers need to be open for the full flow of creativity that we're talking about. And so that constant work of both, and our profession gets, I think, is psychologically overemphasizes the shadow work. You see it in trauma-centered therapy and so on. It's a lot of shadow work, but we don't hear a lot about how do we open the pathways of light and love and current. When you get those two together, in one practice, it's very transformative. So.
I'd like to take a stand for the coaching community, reclaiming that, because I think it's been great that we embrace trauma-informed work. It's been essential. And yes, sometimes it feels like we miss again, like the accessing that sense of intuition or the vision that wants the download to crystallize. So I'm really glad you speak to that. Let's bring some people live now, and then we'll talk a bit more. And I'll just bring people live as they are on my screen as they raise their hands. So David, we'll come to you first. Dear David, welcome. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Good to see you, Bob. Good to see you, Joel.
You
Yeah,
too.
what you just spoke to, what I noticed is like I've recently taken on my own little personal mantra of like trust life and tell the truth. And like both of those things are doing those together is hard. So I noticed that the hardest part of telling the truth is where I'm not trusting life. It's such a paradox, right? And so these moments when life has clearly spoken to me, and the temptation is, no, I'm not the guy. It's not me. Please, not. And that backing away is so terrifying. But then the listening, you know, it sticks out. It's like, okay, what was that? And the next time it comes, okay, let me listen a little bit more. And so this moment, as you said, is so provocatively enormous. The temptation to say, not me. And at the same time, like, no, life is whispering something to me. What is that? Not my certainty, not my, you know, the shadow part of it, not me. Oh, I'm not big enough. I'm unworthy. But also this, oh yeah, this is mine. Now I need to go forward. It's like, no, that's also not quite attuned. It's this quiet place in this intense moment, that quiet place. And so I'm really curious about the practices that, I mean, certainly it helps to have a practice and, you know, to be ready for it. But in the moments where this the life has handed me something that my practice doesn't feel like it's prepared me for, how to in humility merge with that invitation. Does that question make sense?
Absolutely. Couple of things come to mind. One is a line in the David White poem. I don't know the whole poem, but just a line. It only takes the half turn of your face, just the half turn of your face toward truth to scare yourself to the very core. The poetic traditions, mythological traditions, don't mince words here. So this is just the relationship between what I want or what's wanted of me, and then everything in me that's not prepared for that, that would be terrified to go for that, is in my face. So yes is a scary thing. It's not, there is that inner feeling that Joel described of joy of yes. It's like, yes. And then it's like, oh shit. Really? And then I love this Moana experience. I don't know if you've seen the cartoon, the movie Moana, which is such a beautiful experience set in an indigenous tradition where she's called upon to save the community in some way. And she's like, who, me? Yeah. I'm not. Find somebody else. I hear that a lot in my coaching when people are at the edge of something that wants their way. That's like, I think it's very common. But here's the thing. Here's a thing that happened for me. When I said yes to the Unity Academy, and there was a moment where I said yes, then it hits the fan. I would be woken up in the middle of the night in terror, in deep shame. The shadow work just started coming in. And it was as if the universe said, okay, let's get him prepared. So in a very real sense, you're not ready. And there's work to be done. And when you say yes, the universe says yes back. And then the downloads come and the shadows come, and there's a whole process which is continuing to this day that's unfolding. And I'm at the effect of it. I am being worked. I'm not working on myself. I'm being worked and prepared. That's my experience of it. So saying yes, even though there's a voice going, "Who, me?" I'm not. That's it.
It occurs to me that it's kind of a purpose yoga, right? And saying yes, the bigness is like, okay, breathe into that. Like the biggest part of yoga is breathing into the moment, because I can feel the constriction, right? The immediate tightening. That's like, uh-oh. It's like, okay, breathe into that. That's exactly the spot to breathe into.
And there's the work, right?
Beautiful. Thank you.
David, I feel like that's kind of like, it's a beautiful point you bring in, David, and it's kind of the edge, isn't it? That it, you know, it's not all nice and easy, but it's shocking often. I remember I once was on a vision quest, and I spent the whole day like drumming, and I did a death ceremony, and I was, you know, it was like heating up, and it was like 6 hours in, and I got to this point where I could feel like this is, I want, you know, I'd been drumming and chanting, and then I kind of crescendoed to this point where I was primed, and I was looking around, and I looked at this tree, and it was covered in moss, and it was like luminous green. It was like shining at me, and it just said, "Build a school." And to be honest, the first thing that happened was I was like, "No," you know, I was like, "No." So like I'd had other little bits of information come through, and I was like, you know, that kind of fits with how I see myself. But this one piece was like, build a school, and it was like shocking. No, and to this day, you know, I still don't feel like I've fully manifested that, you know, and that's okay. It's a journey. The truth of that expression is still revealing itself through me as my life goes on. I think as you spoke to this, Bob, there's often a thread, isn't there? To these
Yes.
things that come that start to make sense when you look back, you can see, oh yeah, there is a golden thread, a red thread here. Yeah. Maybe we can come to another question. TiVo, I'm really, especially TiVo, it's so good to see you. We've you know, we've interacted online for a number of years, and you know, I feel a lot of care for you, and for someone that I'm only interacting with online, that's really beautiful. So I'm delighted to see you here. Yeah. How
Yeah.
are you?
Good. Thank you, Joel. And I've been stalking you for a long time, right? From the gratitude and appreciation. And I actually see the physiologic shift and change in your facial structure. So I just want to appreciate how long you've been doing this work and how you continue to model and sort of grow and expand. And, you know, Bob, I really appreciate kind of the humility in your own journey. So I work in an organization where LCP is embedded. I'm a LCP practitioner, and then I'm taking Joel's POET, right? The embodied transformational work. And I've studied with some of those teachers. And here's my question. So, you know, so I work in a biotech company. LCP is embedded as the reference point for our leaders. But it's still primarily cognitive. Right. So we have the creative and the reactive at a cognitive level, not at a neurobiological identity, whole person, whole system level. And given that you're the founder, the originator of the LCP, and you're in your own journey, how do we hold eternity while we have 5 minutes, 45 minutes? Right. To me, that's the paradox that I'm very dedicated to this work and every day sort of working it, and the work is working me. And in corporate space, the window, the attention, the possibility is like millimeter, and we need eternity to work that millimeter. So I'm curious what comes up for you in terms of any sort of offerings to work that eternity in a millimeter in a 5 second window.
Slow down. We were just last week we were videoing an 83-year-old Aikido master. Spent 3 days trying to document on video his life work of applying Aikido principles and practice and movement and embodied energetic practice to leadership. And he's worked with senior leaders his whole life. Beautiful man, Chris Thorson. And his voice was failing. So, it was like, we're glad we're doing this now because he may not be around much longer. And what I noticed in the Aikido was that when I'm pr really present and in the flow, in the field, I have all the time I need. Like there's a time dilation effect when you move into this presence. And you don't need like there's eternity in an instant. So where's the secret opening here? How do I get present enough and listen enough to see it? To feel it, to speak into it, and then a lot can happen. And that's the power of deep, deep presence. And so I think the question is, how do I hold that in the midst of this frenetic reality? And then the other thing I would say is that I actually created the leadership circle to get a kinesthetic access, to get into the body, not in the head. And so in the top half, it's all built around longing. It's all built around what matters most. That's our tagline, which is a nice intellectual concept. But we've been talking about that this whole time. What's the felt sense of this deeper pull and longing that I must be about? Not as a should, but as a kind of a soul's unwillingness to invest in a compromise. And some of that, and this speaks to our profession, is if I can't drop into that frequency and hold it with them. They can't access it. So we walk now with Bill and I, my partner Bill, we walk into Honda, high potential leaders that are in a week-long program. And we've been doing this work of stepping into deeper presence, and we're now doing it together. We walk in and they just drop right in with us, like right from the get-go, because we start there. And we're covering the same ground, the same framework, but from a deeper resonance, and they just go, ah. So that's the challenge, and everything we've been speaking to it speaks to that.
Thank you.
And then the other thing I would say is the bottom half underneath is a belief and assumption, any one of those dimensions, I have to be loved and liked all the time, or I'm worthless. So I'm giving up power, for example. Well, how do we use that little sliver as a way into a deep encounter with that belief that's kinesthetic, where I actually feel it and I can see through it to its illusion? And see through it how it's running me in ways I didn't realize in every meeting. And it's not the case. It made sense as a young person. It maybe saved my life. It was a creative, brilliant adaptation, but it's not the case. And that frees up. So that the work has to go deeper. And They won't go there on their own. They'll only go there if we can hold enough presence to meet them and call them into it. And in some ways, it's a Trojan horse. I'll say, we'll talk about, like a dimension like that, and say, well, can you give me an example of that? Are you willing to explore that? And if they say yes, that's my invitation. Okay, let's really drop underneath that. And then it becomes a bodily experience rather than an intellectual one, which is of a little use, frankly. I don't know if that's
Thank you,
helpful.
Tiva.
It was completely helpful because it slowed me down. So, thank you.
There's a line in a poem. It's an old Taoist poem called "Cutting Up an Ox," and he's talking about the tough joints. He said, "I slow down. My whole being apprehends, and then in that awareness, that thin space is all the space I need." I'm paraphrasing. It's more beautifully written than that. This thinness, the thinness of his blade, can find that space, and there's all the space I need.
I'm going to bring in one more question, and then I have a question for you, Bob, as well. A topic I'd love to tee up for a few minutes, and then we'll open up to more questions. We've turned the recording off even as well. But Rosella, would you come live and share what you'd love to share?
Yeah, thank you. It's Rosella.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I have a curiosity around, at the beginning, you were talking about this felt sense of when you're most alive versus when you're bored or agitated as leaning into recognizing this calling. And I can see in retrospect very clearly having had that moment, like both of you, I can tell that story. And I can see that there were times previous to that clarity that I would have said, I feel most alive in this other place or doing this other thing. And so I'm having a curiosity around what comes up for me is maybe there were some unmet needs or maybe there was some shadow happening there. And the curiosity is around maybe practices for discernment around what is that true calling essence of aliveness versus something else that's maybe just excitement or. And I'm also recognizing in myself perhaps that that's all part of the process, and I'm just trying to jump ahead. But I'd love to get both of your feedback or thoughts on that.
Well, you want to start?
Yeah, I do. I've thought about this. It's a great question, actually, Rosella. Rosla. You're mute again, but I'll go ahead anyway. My
Rosella
apologies for getting.
LaGiangela. Yeah, no worries.
Rosalind, yeah. First of all, I think that I wrestled with what I call a tyranny of purpose, where at one point I was like, well, what is it? Like I need to know what this higher purpose is. And it started to kind of berate me, and it actually that questioning was coming from a place of lack, and a sense of needing certainty. And so it was actually very helpful to relax around it and not take it too seriously. And at the same time, which allows those parts to relax and maybe do shadow work with the parts, etc. But and at the same time, of course, also take it seriously. So what I found is in a way, my response is it's both. It's both that in those moments there is an undeniable voice that comes through, and it just, I remember one night I woke up, and this is vulnerable to share, this phrase, bringing the light of God down into others' hearts. It's just like ringing in my mind. And I was like, normally I'd try and write it down, but I knew I didn't need to. So I went back to sleep, and the same phrase woke me up about 5 or 6 times throughout the night. And in the morning, it was still there. And that phrase is still working me. I don't know it, even though it means a lot to me and I feel it, I feel the frequency of it, I feel like I don't fully know and embody what that means. And that's okay. And to keep it playful, also the things that inspire us and we're passionate about are also great indicators of what life is calling us into. And we can access that very easily. So it doesn't need to be just in the domain of work. I think if we see that this higher calling, this sense of being moved in life can show up in every aspect of our lives. And the question that I've loved is, when I'm deeply inspired, what am I serving in life? What am I serving the emergence of in life? Or just keep it, what am I most passionate about? And you will start to feel the frequency of that thing resonating within you. It's more of a place to live from than a place to reach. Sometimes it can feel like tension, like I've got to get to that place where it's all clear and I know it, and I won't be okay until I get to that place. But I think it's actually more of a place to live from and to meet ourselves in the shadow that gets activated. So that's what I would share. What about you, Bob?
Your question is the process. It's a discerning question. What was that aliveness? And even if it may have been a shadow expression or a mere excitement, what was embedded in it that I need to pay attention to? And so you're in the sifting process. When I spoke out loud, I'm not becoming who I am. I went home. I knew in the moment when I read the must thing from Rilke, which was a couple of weeks later, I went, oh, that's the question. And I have the answer. I know that if I sift the database of my life experience, that life has been speaking to me. And so those two questions emerged, most alive, least alive. And I quickly wrote down about 14 things that I think were musts. And I then wrote about each one very carefully, very slowly, like feel into it. What is this? How do I know this is real? Where did I learn this? Why is this important to me? And just feeling, listening, writing intuitively. And there were moments in that where I went, oh, God, if I write this down, I'll cross a bridge I can't go back on. And that was the earlier question about the scary truth. I knew, and then I would write it. So there is a dropping in and a listening and taking your time with it, and the truth will out. And it's remarkable. I wrote down things like, I want to help people grow and develop, and I want to be technically challenged. And I was like, I don't know how to put those two things together. It felt like if I head in the direction of helping people grow and develop, I leave my love of the technical. I grew up, my dad was an engineer. I loved building things. I loved working with engineers. I loved all that. I didn't know how I was going to get that. And look at what unfolded. I've got, creating the Leadership Circle profile both statistically, and we were the first to put it online. Put an assessment like that online was a technical challenge, man. And it's been one ever since. So I'm deep in technology. And so it's very interesting how those musts have all come true, every one of them.
Anything that comes to you, you'd love to share with us before we move on.
Yeah, I love the reminder, and this has felt true for me as well, of the question or the noticing is the journey. And I guess that's where the challenge is for both myself and in support with clients, is helping the noticing to slow down and really pay attention. And noticing not just like thinking on my own journey, There was aliveness, there was excitement, but I can see there were places that felt not in alignment or not healthy for me. In retrospect, I can see how it was encouraging me to go to places that weren't good for me. So noticing that too. And the other thing that I've noticed is where I'm willing to risk and where I'm willing to stay committed has been really informative. Like the areas of what I'm doing and what I'm willing to take bigger risks for or to be more committed, to put in more effort. Those have been some really helpful clues as well. But I feel like it just always comes back down to slowing down. Where we started, slow down, listen. So thank you both.
Thank
Thank you.
paradoxical because we can learn to slow down quickly. We can develop a practice of really just dropping in and dropping open with practice. And so slowing down becomes the time dilation in the way that Einstein talked about it, where time actually slows. And then the ideas rise in crowds. The listening is profound and things happen. Awareness, Terry O'Fallon is very clear about what happens in her third tier of awareness of awareness. Awareness is very fast. It's way faster than the human mind. So the subtle tier in her framework is about the development of the human mind, and then all of a sudden you become into a whole new tier. And people can't finish their sentences because awareness is way ahead of them. And it takes some time to adapt to the speed of it. So, this slowing down and dropping in is actually accessing a subtler range in the field, and the subtle is faster. It's a higher frequency. It like we think of as our cell phone. It's a higher processing speed. That's what happens. And so it's slowing down, but it's not it's time efficient.
Thank you for your great question. I'm gonna shelve the question I had, and I think I just want to take a couple more questions and see where we end up. So, Yasmin, let's bring you live. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello. I'm going to take the opportunity to thank you for the Leadership Circle profile, Bob. I've recently certified and felt like it brings everything together that I've and more. It truly is universal. It's a universal and so helpful in my work. So thank you for that. I have a question, which is when you work with people in this, you said, the when you say yes, the shadow unravels. My sense is the shadow is unraveling for everyone. It feels like whether you want it or not, the times that we're living in are bringing up stuff for everyone, and people are going, I don't know what to do with this. And so they're seeking help because all of our stuff is coming to the surface. That's what it feels like to me. And all of the things that worked before, all of the reactive isn't working anymore. And so my question is really how, because I work with senior leaders in organizations where they're very thinking based. And they come, needing help, wanting help, but they might not appreciate the language of unity. And so I still feel they're developing, they're going through the stages. But my question is, do we need to be aware of the journey, or can we go on the journey without knowing the steps of the journey? My sense is yes, but I'd love your perspective on this.
I've never known the steps of the journey.
I mean, the adult development, the.
I absolutely think so. I think that It's a very useful framework for practitioners to understand what's going on and to maybe dial in the work a little more precisely, or to notice when people can't really embrace what you're talking about because it's later stage. So I don't go in and talk about unity. I don't talk about much of this. I presence it. And then I do the work that's there to do with the listening that's there to work with. And that's mastery. And that's why in the earlier language, Susan Cook-Grutter's model and Bill Tauber's model, you had in these later stages, magician and alchemist, because there's a magician in that kind of the capacity to enter into the spaces where the person most needs to work where, with real presence, and then magic would happen. That's the kind of magician quality that can develop in these later stages. So the models are useful. In fact, I'm in another huge integration project looking across all the great wisdom traditions. Literally, like when I'm done, we'll have 30 of them and then realizers within those traditions. And what I'm seeing is that there's a meta pattern of phenomenology, like how experience unfolds across the millennia of time and all these traditions. Truly a universal pattern with lots of nuance around it in these different traditions and differences, but there's an underlying meta pattern. And that points to an ontology, that points to the structure of reality itself, and therefore the structure of the human body and energy and psyche and how all that is structured. So there is a path, there is a way in which development tends to proceed because of that structure. And I think the great traditions were mapping ontology, mapping reality. And as we fuse with it, as we merge with it more deeply, these capacities unfold, these experiences unfold naturally. So you don't need to know the map, but it's really helpful, like in these great traditions, like the Sufi tradition, for example. You would get hooked up with a master who could actually guide you through the stations. They call them stations of realization of reality, deeper layers of reality. So it's a helpful thing for practitioners to have the map, but you don't need to have the map in order to proceed. If I'm a leader, here's the work in front of me now. How can I meet that as a coach and be helpful? They don't need the map. And they're actually not interested in the map until later stages.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
People, all the stage theorists talk about that, whether it be Susan Cook-Grutter or Terry O'Fallon or Ken Wilber, it doesn't matter. At certain early, you're not yet able to see the map and you don't care. It's only later that you go, oh, wow, I've gone through this whole process. You get interested in the map.
Yeah, so it's all just in service of being more effective at what I'm doing right now. That's the
Yeah.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
that's fine.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah.
That's enough. That's all it's good for, really.
Yeah. Great. Thank
Yeah,
you.
I could add something here. I found it, just to build on what you're sharing, is that the in my own experience, what's been very powerful as well is to work with the states that correlate with stages, because states are something I can really work within the present moment, and not to try to make clients go to certain states, but there's a way that I can be an embodiment, the possibility for certain states to emerge, which then can start to crystallize and become more of the structure, the identity of the client. So having a generative ontology something like a universal ontology that supports the emerge, as Bob said earlier in the call, what is it that supports the emergence of life itself in the coaching conversation has been very powerful for me. Because yeah, some if not I can get caught in kind of trying to map stages to my client in the coaching conversation itself, which can be useful, but it can also create a distance between, the presence, the intimacy of being with another being as you're in this co-emergent dialogue together. So I mean, I think this is a really important topic, and we could explore this in a future podcast as well. Yeah, Yasmin, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. Like one, I'd like to actually invite you to share in the chat, everybody who's with us, how could we serve you more deeply? How could Coaches Rising serve you more deeply on your coaching journey there? And then whilst you're doing that, Bob, I'd love to come back to you and first of all, thank you for
Thank
taking
you.
part in this. I think this has been a really, really exquisite, I'm trying to find the word, exquisite conversation. And is there anything you want to share with people here and with people on the podcast listening in closing?
Oh, I think we've said a lot. I'm drawn to the words that awakened you in the night. What were those words?
Bringing the light of God down into others' hearts.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to honor those words. It aligns with how I've what I'm coming to know about life. You see, the deepest layer of our being, however you define ultimate reality, God, Brahman, emptiness, doesn't matter. That's our ground of being. We are that. And it's luminous. It's empty luminosity. And when you're in contact with it, it's just utterly blissful, joyful, still. And I think what I'm most wanting to impart is the ability to have joy coursing through your body all the time. And joy, bliss, love, equanimity, stillness, all in one movement, or that's possible. And in that, I do my best work. So I don't care how we define this profundity. But it's accessible, it's real, and you can become more and more unified with it. And as you do, life gets even in difficult times, there's a center of joy that's becomes more and more visceral, more and more embodied. And I would have that for everyone. And if I think if that became a more prevalent reality, we would have a very different world.
Amen for that. Yeah, thank you, Bob. Thank you sincerely. And everybody who's been on the call and Noah for hosting us.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.